HomieCast 22 with Jimmy Dalpiaz and your boy Joey C.
Hey, how you doing? Now remember, I'm a homie virgin here, so treat me nice here.
You're a homie virgin.
I'm a homie virgin. I'm proud to have it.
Your pot
started it with you.
You know, it's funny. We usually have a big gang, and we're drunk, and we're eating copious amounts of meat. And but I'm at work, and I just, you know, everybody's been busting my chops. Crystal Wolf, namely, always busting my chops. His ex-wife Alicia, constantly busting my chops that we don't do any homie cast. I send out the call, and here we are. So thanks, DeWolf, for showing up. Not. Thanks, everybody else, for showing up. I don't want to hear it from any of you motherfuckers. That is it. Busy week in the sports world. I always get depressed. The worst day of the whole year for me is the day after the Super Bowl, whether the Patriots win or lose.
Yeah.
Because to me, the NFL is huge. But now things are starting to ramp up. We're past the NBA All-Star break. We got spring training.
We're past Birdie singing the national anthem.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
We did better. We did better at the Super Bowl.
We did.
In downstairs.
At Barry's house.
Yes.
Now, do you think that helped her career or hindered her career?
Well, you know, I don't really know if I think they're gonna get her to sing again, and I think people are gonna go through because she was right on it right away and said, "Hey, I did my best. It didn't turn out
the way
I tried."
She took a chance.
I mean, when Roseanne sang the national anthem for the baseball, that there, because Roseanne is coming back on TV and they're showing everything about Roseanne these days, and they had to show that again. You know, that was a major
She
hit.
Did that on purpose, though. She went out of her way to make it a mockery of it.
Well, when she started to hear, and she talked about it and said that when it started to get really out of control, when she heard people started, it made her do more things. That's why she grabbed a crutch at the end and she spit on home plate and everything.
Oh, I didn't know she did.
Oh, yeah. When she was all done, she grabbed a crutch and she spit on home plate. She said she was trying to be like a baseball player. But she just said she got out of control because the crowd hated it so much. So I think Fergie's going to be fine. She'll end up on Ellen real soon. And Ellen will give her a hug and everyone will cheer. And then, of course, it will be on the TV stations that she showed up on Ellen. And Ellen says it's okay, so Fergie's all right.
There you go. I think the Fergie was kind of like off everybody's radar, and no one's talked about. She had the. It's funny. The whole NBA All Star break went by, right? You have all these games, the dunk contest, everything. The only thing anyone talked about was Fergie.
Yeah.
That's what came out of the NBA All Star weekend was Fergie.
Yep, and all the faces of the players
Laughing at her rendition, pretty much. So we had that. We have the Olympics, this is more Olympics that I've watched in probably 30 years. I don't know about you. I mean, for some reason or another, this one has certain aspects of this Olympics has captivated me. The women's, I love Olympic hockey. How can you not? Ever since, you know, back in 1980 when the Americans beat the Russians.
Miracles?
I actually paid this week. I paid because it's not on demand. Miracle, the one with Kurt Russell.
Mm-hmm.
I paid for my daughters to be able to watch that movie because I thought that movie was so great.
Yeah.
I went on a, the first time I ever went skiing was 1980 on a YMCA ski trip. And the first time I ever went down the mountain, I fell off the T-bar half the way up on my way to my first lesson. on my way down the mountain from that first trip up on the T-bar, I broke my leg. My parents had to come get me at Crotchet Mountain.
Wow.
And I was in bed with a big, you know, those old style plaster of Paris casts.
Jeez.
And the best part about it was those games of that Olympics with the USA hockey.
Yeah.
I was in bed home from school. I watched the whole week unfold leading up to that. Unbelievable.
Well, that's the way to do it. I mean, one thing about the Olympics is you have to be watching it all the time. And because it goes on till the wee hours in the morning, or it starts at 5 or 6 in the morning if they wanted to see a certain match. So that's the big change. I think that's one reason why more people are watching it. There are some people who binge watch things.
Yeah.
I think there were a lot of binge watchers.
Well, NBC did a great job covering it. First of all, the cameras that they're using, they're getting great shots, and the announcers, it didn't matter when I turned it on, they did such a good job announcing each event that it pulled me right in. The stories, the backstories, and the drama unfolding. You know, I feel bad for anyone that doesn't like sports because there's so much human emotion that goes into these things. It's crazy.
And I was watching, some things that I really like. I like the luge things. I don't get it. I personally know someone, a good friend of mine, is friends of the family from the girl who held the flag on the start of it. She's from New York, from Remsen, New York, and she's a luge person. And I met her when she was very, very young. She played in the band, we didn't exchange. So I met her, and when she was very young doing stuff, and here she is doing this. So, I mean, I was just thinking that so many people are getting so involved with certain things, and the stories they have there.
So one of the stories that popped out to me, I was watching I took my for a school vacation. I had my daughters, and we went to the Monster Trucks on Saturday, and we were gonna go to the Providence Bruins game on Sunday night. As it turns out, we're in Providence at a hotel, and my eldest gets she very sick, like a 102 temperature, and we stayed in. And we're watching the Olympics, and there was a 30 for 30 on ESPN about the Nigerian bobsled team, women's bobsled team. And I'm watching it, and it's three women speak perfect English, went to the University of Houston and played track and field for the University of Houston. I think that their parents were born Nigerian, but I think that they were born in the United States. And I kind of, and they just started, so for them to qualify, they had to do 5 bobsled races on, courses in the United, within the previous year or something like that to qualify as a team. Nigeria had never had a bobsled team.
No,
so this was something that was going to be new for them. And they were incredible athletes, beautiful women, strong black women. But I just find it kind of strange that, descendants from a place, I don't think that they were Nigerian citizens, can represent Nigeria in the Olympics and get a team, because there isn't a team there representing it, they can kind of go through the motions of, they just had to get through, these 5 runs, and then they qualify for the biggest stage. And so I was torn. I like the story because, these women really wanted to do this, and they got to do it. But on the other hand, I kind of feel like, is it right if you're not like a citizen to be able to represent that country? I have a problem with that.
Well, one time we were watching the figure skating, and they talked about this couple, And while they were watching this couple, they were, one was from France and the other one was from Germany. So I'm saying to myself, wait, how can you do that? Well, they explained that the lady from Germany always had a partner, and she was world-winning, and she won gold in this stuff. Well, the partner decided, okay, I don't want to do it anymore, I'm done. She said, I want to do this, and she always skated with this guy from France. He got a citizenship in Germany, and just before the Olympics, he passed some sort of test, and they were interviewing him about it, saying, oh, it was so hard, but I finally did. So he passed a test to become a German citizen so he could be skating with her under Germany. And by the way, they won. So I was listening to that, and I'm looking at that saying, wait, what is this?
Yeah, I don't know.
So there was some things that way. I agree with you. I don't get it. Because back in the 80s, when you all bummed up in your knee, no way. I mean, that was USA. You know, that was born and raised. Those kids are from around here. You know, you've seen the story, how some of them made, well, you just saw the movie, and the Kurt Russell
movie. Miracle, yeah.
The Miracle, and you could see that they were just born and raised. And
yeah, traded their whole life for it.
So
I just kind of like, it's kind of... It's also disappointing to me that, like, someone can, you know, there's people that train their whole lives for a certain sport, and then, you know, they go to the Olympics, and they make it to, they qualify for the Olympics, and they make it onto that big stage, and then you have someone that just picks up this, has this crazy idea, and says, oh, we're going to go for it, and then 10 months later, they're in the Olympics on the biggest stage. Right. In the world. And there was another example of it on a different one where I think it was the half pipe or something, where this woman, to qualify for this half pipe event, all you had to do was to enter 30 different of these events around the world within the past year. So she had no skill whatsoever, but she entered 30 of these events, and she went down the mountain just kind of like lollygagging. Everybody could see, you could see that she had no experience at all, was not even in the same stratosphere, but she qualified in the Olympics.
Yeah,
and it was just ridiculous.
I read about that, and That's playing the system. One of the figure skaters, again, one of the figure skaters from Russia, she won the gold, and they're saying it clearly states if you do a certain lift or a certain twist or something that way, you get all these extra points. However, if you do it on the last 3 minutes of your performance, you get extra credit. So she said, why am I doing it in the beginning? It clearly states... So she did all these things and got all this extra credit. So she won by points, where everybody was looking at her saying her first 2 or 3 minutes was boring. Then all of a sudden, she kicked it in. All the judges gave the scores, and the announcers, you can imagine, they were going a little crazy saying, is this really fair and everything else?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know, hey, is it the spike rule, you know?
Yeah.
Do you spike and then throw a touchdown? What? You know?
There you go.
They know how to do it.
I don't know what was more exciting to me. The women's cross-country skiing, which the women won the first ever medal. You know, U.S. women won the first ever medal, and they won by like half of a ski length. It was so exciting to watch. Or the U.S. women's hockey winning in a shootout against Canada. Both super exciting. Did you see replays of?
Yes.
You said you watched the hockey. Did you see the cross country?
Just the replay of them going over and at the end, just throwing themselves over. Yeah.
Oh my God! So. Such incredible athlete. So this girl, one of the participants, Jessie Diggins, really pretty girl. You know, I'm reading. I'm obsessed with diets, and so there's this article that says, you know, what is Jessie Diggins? You know, what is her diet consist of? So I click on it, and I in the article, like, you know, there's a picture of her and her dad, like, you know, like preparing their dinner, and the dad looks like 7 or 8 years younger than me. Just like, oh my God, how old am I? This like incredible athlete, and this is her dad who looks younger than me.
I'm well,
like,
when your girls make it to the Olympics, you'll be on TV. Oh, we'll look at you.
Yeah,
we'll get you ready. So, makeup does great things, Joey. Don't worry about it.
Oh God, I'm way past that. But the women's hockey featured a girl from Danvers, Megan Duggan. And that finish. So how did you fall on this thing? Because there was some people were saying they don't like that it ended in a shootout. That it should have ended, like, they should have just kept skating until there was a overtimes, until someone scored a goal in play, as opposed to a shootout.
Well, the shootout is a nerve-wracking thing because I know from public high school, when I coached field hockey for umpteen years, we never had something like that, only in the state finals. Because as they told us, you have to have a winner. And state finals is, you got to move on. Part of it is, okay, just because you're playing, another class has to come in. So they explained to us is, there's like a time limit.
You have to wrap it up, yeah.
Hey, in softball, real quick, in softball, they were talking about making a time limit that, you know, they were going to go so many innings, and if you're taken slowly or if it's a 0-0 thing, after a certain time, they're going to say, okay, the next hit or something will win the game. They're talking about that because of time limit, and they want to move on so they can get the next thing going. So what happened when I heard that they were doing a shootout, my first thing is, oh, somebody has to lose on a shootout. That means it's that goalie and that person. And here you go. So that one shot, and it goes in, and everybody saw it. They made some great saves. But that one USA girl had the moves.
She broke the ankle.
Oh, the goalie did it right. She went that way. The goalie did everything right, and somehow she had control. Moved it aside. If you take a look, whoop, she just flipped it over, and the goalie knew it.
Yeah.
Now, the girl had a chance to go and tie it and move it on and do another shootout.
Yep, and the USA goalie...
She came in and she just concentrated on it. The move was not as strong, so the goalie was all over it, and she just, like, Jabba the Hutt. She was on top of that thing and no way. And then when she did it, she had to look up because she didn't realize, and like any goalie, what do you mean it's over? Like, if you first look at it, she really didn't make it, then threw everything. She looked up at her team, who was screaming.
She wanted a triple check. I thought that shootout was unbelievable, but what was the looks on, and how? Oh, so how the USA tied it? Why don't you go? It was honestly, you love that the US won, but so USA went up 1-0. And then Canada scored 2 goals in a row. So most of the game, Canada was up 2-1.
Yeah.
And then on a bad line change, the U.S. girl was streaking, and there was nobody back on defense. And so totally on the coaches. 100% on the coaches. And they failed those girls.
Yeah. If the goalie probably for Canada saw her girls being the change and saw this and all of a sudden had a gear to what's going on to, you know, what the fuck's going on, and now, oh shit, I better stop this. And that shot that came in was a nice, I mean, the girl just drilled it.
Yeah.
And it went right past her. So in my opinion, the goalie was overwhelmed on what's going on, that half my team switched off and then had
on
to go
a breakaway.
Yeah. So then it was tied. But then they went into an overtime, you know, overtime play.
Yeah.
Which was
And then the US, they called a penalty on the US with like 2 minutes left in the overtime period, and they killed the power play.
Yep, they killed it. Well, first of all, they went into an overtime, what was it, 15 minutes, 20 minutes? I think it was 15-20. All I kept saying to myself was, whoa. Because I know, again, I relate to field hockey. When you go into overtime, they cut the field down from 11 to 7. And it's 7-on-7. And
for this, they cut it down to 4. Four on four.
Yeah, so they do that, and we only go for like maybe 5 minutes. So it's a big free-for-all for 7-on-7. You can sub, you can do your thing, but 7-on-7 on a big field. So cutting it down to 4, yeah, that would do it. So USA got through all that. They made some great saves. And then they finally said, we got to do the shootout. And what a move. And then the second one, the Canadian girl did not have the big move, and our goalie was on top of it.
It ended at 3 o'clock in the morning, U.S. time. And then afterwards, I was watching the medal ceremony, which happened right afterwards. Mm-hmm. The Canadian team emotionally completely devastated. The looks on their faces, they couldn't believe it. The tears, the watching the U.S. girls celebrate, and it seemed like it took a half an hour to get the medals dispersed. First, they gave them to Team Finland, who got the bronze, and then slowly going through the Canadian girls, and then to the United States, and so like the third or fourth Canadian girl to get the medal placed around her neck. They put it around her neck, and she immediately took it off. Mm-hmm. She wanted no part of that medal. And, you know, I can't fault, you know, Kate was on the couch, and we're watching it together, and she says, that's terrible, that's terrible. I'm like, in my head, I'm saying to myself, you know what these girls just went through, I don't fault them for any, like, short of spitting or not shaking hands or anything, I can't fault them for anything that they do at this point.
Well, sorry, Joey, I'm with Kate on that one. I thought it was really poor to do that. You can be upset, but you're going to get off the ice as soon as your team all get their medals. Yeah. So your teammates get the accolades to get that. Then get off the ice because they're going to do the photo and they're going to do all that. We, again, with states up in softball, Pat and I are very involved with that. I saw that where a perennial team in a certain class wins every year. He is there almost every year. Well, this one year, he's up there, and I guess the tides were turning because there were some calls that didn't go his way. And all of a sudden, it started to turn. The girls did not give up. And don't you think in the bottom of the seventh inning, a girl wins the other team, and they win the states. Yeah. So we have to go out there, and Pat was the one. Yeah. She went out there, and she's handing this perennial guy the second place team.
Right.
He got it. They handed him all the medals. He walked over. He put the whole thing on home plate and walked away and told his girls, go over there. I'll talk to you over here. So everybody, now it's not being filmed, but everybody's staring at all the trophy and the medals right there at home plate. And he said a little bit later that he felt, you know, that's my plate. I can do what I want. I didn't win the game, but that's my plate. So that's where he put it for the other team to look at. And, of course, Pat was in charge of that section.
Yeah.
So she took tremendous heat about that because people wrote letters to her as a section coordinator or whatever. So we thought of that immediately. So we saw it, and Pat just went.
Yeah.
You know, she went flipping on it and everything. So I did think that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I agree. Big emotion. When you were supposed to, you had this.
They had it. They were up 2-1.
Yes.
They were up 2-1. And then through no fault of their own, it was the coach that called for the line change. Oh, my God. Well, oh, my God. Incredible.
Yeah. Incredible. That was incredible.
So there was that.
And kudos to the men's curling. I have no idea what that thing is. I understand it's about 40 pounds. I don't know. I'm thinking sometime, Joey, you know, I know we're not going to really have bad weather, but I'm going to get maybe a keg. and then we're just going to have to try it ourselves. Let's see if we can do that, Joe. Men's curling on some ice.
I don't think I could. I don't think I could stretch my legs to get down.
No, you'll be the brusher.
I'll be the brusher. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we'll get one of the guys.
Fluffer.
Yeah, we'll get some of the other guys that didn't show up today. Maybe they could push the keg, and you know.
I was up in January. Kate and I went to Montreal, and first thing we did, we went to this great restaurant, and all the televisions had Canadian qualifying for the Olympics.
Wow.
For the curling.
Wow.
And it was everybody was at this bar to watch the Canadians qualify for curling. It was like, what is going on here? People really care about it that much, and they do. And the Americans won.
Well, I was at the Elks, and they had it on TV, and we had to stop three of them because they really wanted to try and slide the glass across and take the disc that you put your beer on. They were using that to kind of brush everything away, all the crumbs. They were trying it. It was really quite funny, but it didn't go very far. But they, kudos, you're winning. I'm looking at those guys. I look at their photo and...
Oh, with the mustache on the guy.
Yeah, I'm looking at the mustache. I'm looking at the beer belly on one of them, and I'm going, boy, they must have celebrated pretty good, you know.
The Canadian teams, when we were up there watching, they were so... Everything that the Americans were, the Canadians were complete opposite. The Canadians were... They had these, millennial haircuts. They're all coiffed and, completely, buff, and the women were like, everything was so polished, and it looked like the guys just spilled out of a 40-year-old plus men's summer league softball tournament to show up for this.
Yeah, the USA shirts for the guys look like it's a softball tournament. They went to a store and somebody iron pressed the letters on.
That's awesome.
Compared to the others. So anyway.
Baseball season, you're very involved with the minor league Mets team.
Yeah.
And so now, Tim Tebow was at spring training for the Mets.
Yes.
Russell Wilson now at spring training for the Yankees. What? Okay. It has to be, but I'm going to let you speak to it. Are they that desperate to get people into the seats? Because they know that these guys aren't going to make the team. So why bring these guys in? Is it just to sell tickets 100%, or is there some other reason?
Well, I can't speak so much for Russell, but it's probably got to be the same formula. With Tebow, he wanted to try baseball. It was something he tried. He went out and did a free, everybody look at me. Some teams refused to send scouts. They thought this was a game. And they said, we're not sending anybody. A lot of people did, Mets being one. When somebody went out there, they probably looked at it and said, you know what? We could put tremendous people in the seats because he's from Florida. He's got a tremendous background. That's where the home base is for the Mets and the Yankees, of course, too. But, wow, that could be something. So before you know it, they signed him for a low, low A. I mean, he went to a team in Carolina that probably has wooden slots for seats and that kind of stuff. They brought him out there. He sold out the place. They couldn't handle the traffic. They they couldn't make enough hot dogs for the people to come in. So all of a sudden somebody went, whoa, this is a nice thing. So they moved him up from the Carolina, and that was why people were going, he's batting 200. But he moved from the lowest A, and they moved him up where there's some kids who are trying so hard to get in there, and they're batting whatever. But they moved him up, so he moved up to the higher A.
He did put asses in seats.
He put tremendous asses in seats.
And it becomes, so the local news stations, they can't avoid the story.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, it's free, it's also like paying for advertising.
Oh.
Because they're going to talk about him.
Yep.
That gets into people's consciousness. Oh, let's get tickets for the game. But, whatever. So it's that's what it's all about.
Hey, our hometown, Binghamton, we have one big CBS station that, that's the one everybody looks at. And there's an NBC and a Fox one. But they're really, really kind of a small little thing. But the CBS guy, they sent somebody down to spring training because we're going to get Tebow in Binghamton. He's coming to us. So they went down there figuring, I'm going to interview him, we're going to talk to him, and do all this other stuff. And, you know, so they're trying to talk about what's going to happen with Tebow. We are definitely in Tebow mode.
There's a leaked baseball proposed change, which I feel like this is the same type of thing. On the Rich Eisen show Tuesday, Rich and the host and Rich Eisen mentioned that there are whispers from some baseball execs that there's a discussion to let a trailing team in the ninth inning of Major League Baseball use any three hitters it wants to start the inning, regardless of where the batting order is. Now, I listened to this, and initially, my first thing is, it sounds so preposterous. And then I start to think about it, and I'm saying to myself, are they that desperate to get people talking about baseball that they will float this preposterous of an idea out there that, in my mind, has not even an infinitesimal chance of actually ever happening? There's no, you know, baseball purists.
Yeah.
There is, like, for something like this, there's no possible way they would really entertain this. I feel like it's such a desperation marketing move that what are your thoughts?
I can't believe you told me that this morning and I did not read that, and I just totally cannot believe that they would change the basics of baseball, which is the strategy of it. A lot of it's strategy. I mean, there are so many people that hated the DH. That's why National League will never have the DH, because they're going to say, we're going to be forever. We will never go to
the
DH.
I hate the DH. And I'm in the American League. I hate the DH. I think it's stupid.
I think it
don't
was...
You, do you think... you're not in the American League.
No.
Don't you
I
think
I don't
it's,
follow as much.
What?
I don't follow the American League.
But don't you think it's stupid that a pitcher can throw at guys and never have to bat?
Yeah. I think it's, you know, in the minor leagues, what happens is if we play an American League team, we get a DH. So in our league, we have a couple of American League teams. So we don't play them that often. So we don't get that. Our pitcher's bad. And I think it's wild because they don't want the kids going through. But then again, some of these kids can hit like crazy, like Jacob DeGrom. This guy can hit. He pitches extremely well. You got to see him hit, too. So as far as the American League goes, I think it was just another way to get some big-time players, another big bat in there that they could use. I don't know. Look at the World Series. They used the DH in a couple of things. Did it help the National League teams by not having that batter, the pitcher bat? I don't know. They always have that discussion at the end. I personally like the strategy of it. I want to see the pitcher out there. But when you get the pitcher
standing
there... You
like not having a DH.
Right. And you get the pitcher... Now, I've seen some of those pitchers. I throw fastball. Baseball, very good to me. So I stand there and I hold the bat, and I don't care what you throw. So the pitcher gets to throw three, like, baloney pitches at him, and he's not swinging because right. He doesn't want to run and hurt himself.
He doesn't want to run, and he also doesn't want to maybe overextend his arm or whatever.
And we've seen more pitchers. Well, I know it happened to the Mets. They were legging out the hit, like he hit one, and it was a big inning. They were trying to. They were saying they were running so hard to get on bases because the top of the order is the money for him. So they were trying to get there.
Yeah.
And he hurt. He pulled a hamstring, and he was out forever. So that's when they start talking again. Well, if there was a DH, the pitcher only has to pitch. Well, does that mean the baseball game is only turning into pitching now? Who cares?
I think it's dumb. I think they never should have.
This rule that you're telling me today.
That's never even going to happen. The point is, how desperate are they to get people to talk about baseball that they have to float something like this that's so preposterous that they know that talking heads I mean, well, they, I got to talk about it.
They got rid of the, we can call it a shot clock, but they got rid of the time clock that they had out last year and I think the year before, where they time in between innings how much the pitcher can warm up. They also have, if somebody goes out to the mound, they timed it. You only, or you have this much pitching minutes before you pitch. And if you go over that, the umpire has the right to call a ball. Because you went past the thing. They got rid of that clock. Now they're saying that they're going to have a new rule that you can only go out to the mound total, I'm going to say, six, seven times a game.
Right. And want, the whole point there. Is they really want to speed up the game. They want to get them in within a certain amount of time.
And I don't know the theory behind that. My problem is...
Well, they want more people watching, that's why.
I've been to some ball games, Joey, when I got there, and okay, so I was out in the parking lot, okay, I don't tailgate with the football as much, but you know, you're out there having a good time, now you go in for the game, and then there's a pitcher's duel going on, and before you know it, the fifth inning's there, and you're like maybe a beer or two in, and you want the other one, and they go, last call, because they turn the beer off.
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, if, so they're going to make the game shorter, then get rid of the seventh inning... cut the beer off because I mean, do it after a certain time. I'll turn the beer off at a certain time, but don't say, well, we're turning off at the beginning of the seventh inning. We're so quick now. I mean, come on. And they give you the taller can, so you can't down those all the time. So I can see, I don't understand why they're trying to make it quicker. I don't, yet they're paying them more. And speaking of that, as we speak right here, JD Martinez still isn't signed. I mean,
I read the headline, but I didn't read.
There's
the story.
Something going
what's
you know, okay? What happened was
he spoke a couple weeks ago. I read that he was disgusted the way the talks were going, and I think he wanted $125 million for 5 years, and the Red Sox weren't willing to give that,
right.
And he was frustrated.
Right.
And then didn't you hear something like it was going to be something like 100 or 110 million for 5 years? That's what he was supposed to sign for?
What I heard and what I know is Red Sox are looking at Hosmer and him. Those are the two they were putting their bank on. No doubt that they were playing each other.
Yeah.
Because Hosmer was not signing with the Royals. So he was hanging in there, telling the Royals, yeah. But he really was playing out there. So when Hosmer went to San Diego, which I'm still trying to figure that one out, you go from a world champion team with all these stuff and you go out to San Diego. You better have family out there or something.
But, money.
Well, he went out there. He got the money.
Money, all of a sudden, money and the climate and no pressure.
And
no pressure in San Diego.
And then 2 days later, Boston says, okay, we're going with JD.
Yeah.
Now they're saying it has to be a physical and all this other stuff. He hasn't signed. They haven't announced it. Something fell apart. I'm hearing... he didn't pass one of the Red Sox physicals. And it wouldn't surprise me that there are some people out there in the Red Sox who are saying, oh, come on. Let's say you're a prize fighter and you got to get so many weight by here. Okay, listen, come back in about an hour. He's going to go in the gym and sweat it all off. Now do it. There's no doubt in my mind that something happened physically and it didn't pass one of their tests. But they really want him.
Yeah.
Now, it could be the money, but he agreed to a deal. So I can't see unless something goes really changed. I think there's something out there that didn't pass. And the Red Sox, and that's why it's so hush-hush. It's hush-hush. They're not saying money.
Yeah.
They're just, I mean, the guys on TV, all the announcers are going, we're not really sure why they have not announced him yet.
Yeah.
We think, and somebody went, well, usually, then of course they talk to the major league guys on TV, major league channel and everything, and they go, well, if they're saying that something happened in the physical, there's some report on the physical somebody doesn't like. But we need them. Red Sox needs them. There isn't anybody out there unless you trade away the world.
They need them. I mean, is it even going to make a difference, though?
See, Boston wouldn't play this... sign a player like the Yankees. I firmly believe, going back to Russell, I firmly believe the Yankees traded for Russell and all that stuff because the Mets got Tebow. the Mets got Tebow, and they are going to bring him in, and he's putting butts in seats.
Yeah.
And it's a game. So the Yankees went out and said, you know, it's always been that way with the Yankees.
But they spent
Mets.
All the money. Giancarlo Stanton. J.D. Martinez is not Giancarlo Stanton.
No.
Not even. I mean, not.
Well, yeah. But he's young and he's got some great numbers. I think it's a great move. I don't personally know why people didn't sign him sooner. There's got to be something out there for him to go through, just like Hosmer. So finally, they're settling for some money. So this is going to be interesting the way it turns out. But,
I'm wondering if there's like a big shakeup in TV contracts. This is what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if there are... You know how the only way to get certain things is by paying for... different packages through cable and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, Rick Dowsett just told me he got, he's signed up for Sling TV plus Yahoo something or other, internet TV, but he's not using the cable company, but he's still getting the local channels. And I'm wondering if there's like those huge, huge television baseball contracts are in the process of being completely reversed a little bit. It's the only thing that could make sense to me why, you know how we talked about a couple weeks ago about how there's been so few big signings?
Yeah.
And there's a huge amount of people that are
right.
unsigned and the Yankees came out, you know, aggressively and got their guy and paid all the money. Not what JD Martinez is going to get is far less than what Stanton got. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how.
Stanton wasn't a free agent. That was a flat out trade.
Yeah.
Trade, and I'll take your contract and everything else. So that's how the Yankees did it. They didn't go free agent. And of course, the big talk is who's really looking at all this is Bryce Harper. Because he'll be a free agent next year, and he's the big... I mean, right now, we didn't even start the season yet,
yep.
And everyone's talking about what Bryce could get. If he's getting this, then Bryce can get this for next... And Bryce knows it, and of course he has it. And of course, there's only a certain amount of teams that can take on the big contracts, no matter how you slice it. And that's why
the Yankees won't be in that conversation if they got Stanton. I mean, they're not even going to be in that conversation, probably, with what they pay, having to pay Judge, having to pay Stanton. I mean,
you would think. The Yankees sometimes find a way. Like, look at this. Who would think Stanton would come to the Yankees? But Jeter made some deal, and it was a big trade. And that was the big talk after a while. Well, Jeter
didn't feel like
the Yankees.
I feel like the Yankees are the Red Sox are half-assed in this Martinez thing. And almost hoping that it falls through, so they just forfeiting the season almost, and saving that gunpowder for Bryce Harper.
Well, you know, I can't speak for all your GMs and how they work.
Yeah.
The only one I really know is Sandy Alston, and because of Binghamton, and I personally met him and his son when Sandy was sick. His son came out and did a lot of the business. And I've met them a few times when they go through, and they're both straight-up guys, and they're both, they really were looking to rebuild the program, and they were looking to do all this. And how many times did people, you would see all these people released and then picked up here, and the Mets wouldn't do it because he stuck his guns. He wouldn't get rid of, you know, these young kids that we have. Yes, and then we had a run at the World Series, but we came up short because flat out Kansas City's better. Even though we beat the Dodgers and the Cubbies, whoa, you just can't. But everyone knew. I mean, Kansas City really could slug the team up. Now, Kansas City's all broken up. That's why Hosmer says, I'm out. So there's something going on. I don't know in baseball. It's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. I go in spring training in a week. I go down there and spend a couple of days with the guys. I'll see a couple of the players. I know some of them, so I can't wait.
I'm disappointed. My vacation down April. I'm going to Naples, and I'm not. There's no games scheduled while I'm going to.
There will be up in the majors by then.
Jimmy, you drink beer?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, what's your beer of choice?
My beer of choice is I drink Coors Light because I can do a bunch of those and I still can be thinking clearly and enjoy myself. However, I do enjoy, I'll drink a craft beer, an IPA. When I go to certain places, like when I go to Jalapeno's, Ave Especial, I'll go out and do that. When I'm over at the Italiano's or Tano's, I'll have the Italian beer, Perini's. I'll do.
So it's interesting to me. It's that Coors Light is your go-to beer. Coors Light is my go-to beer, and nowadays it's almost you have to look around before you say that because there's so many. The craft beer craze has completely taken off,
right.
And I feel like if you don't drink an IPA, you're looked down at as like a second-class citizen. Although there are some craft beer, I don't like IPAs, but I do like a stout. I like a creamy, milky stout. But what's it? So when I go to Mexico with the guys, I drink Sol. And Sol, Mexican Sol, ice cold on the beach, is very similar to ice cold Coors Light. I can sit on a beach and literally drink 12 Sol, stand up, and think coherently. I'm not stupid enough. I would not get behind the wheel of a car. I'm not speaking like I'm dumb like that. What I am saying, it's very strange to me that I could drink 12 Sol or 12 Coors Lights, like watching baseball with my buddies and stuff like that, and walk home just fine, not kind of stumbling around or anything like that. But like last night we went to Lat 43 and they had this drip drop coffee stout, I think it was called. Mm-hmm. And it was delicious. I had two of them. I really, really enjoyed them. But I was tipsy.
Yeah.
I mean, two.
Yeah.
And I was tipsy, Jim.
Well, the alcohol percentage probably was like a 10%.
I don't know, 10, but I bet you it's up around 8 or 9.
Yeah.
But still, two.
Yeah.
I mean, a regular beer, if it's 4.5% of Coors Light, you would think four is going to get you to the same place that the two. I could drink four Coors Lights and not feel the way I drank after two of those coffee stouts.
You know, and sometimes if I know I'm going to go to a place, and I know I'm going to be there for a little while, sometimes Coors Lights, I don't do that. I do PBRs. It's kind of weird to say PBRs in some places, especially if you're going out to eat somewhere. You go to a restaurant and you say, hey, give me a PBR. They say, what? At least say Coors Light. Oh, yeah, we have that. But
do they have PBRs at the Elks?
Yeah.
They do. I know they have it at Pratty's, too.
Yeah.
I don't know anywhere else in town. But I might have to try a PBR. The last time I tried it, I wasn't crazy about it, but maybe it wasn't. Like, there's a big difference between an ice cold beer.
Yeah.
Just a little bit cool, you know.
Well, a tall PBR, I can hang on to that. And I can do that for a while. I'm fine. I can have a few of those, and I'm fine walking around the place. To me, a tall PBR, a couple of Coors Lights. You got the bottles and you do everything else. What I'm not is I'm not really a Bud drinker. They call it Bud Heavy, and I know why. Bud Light, yep, everybody does it. I could do that. But
I interchange Coors Light and Bud Light.
Yeah.
Coors Light a little bit more crisp to me.
So, you know, when I'm going to somebody's house and what do I bring? Yep, I'll bring Coors Light because I forget that's what they do. But craft beer, yeah, definitely. I go down to Cape Ann Brewery. And I have Fisherman's, and they have like three different ones. I really liked some of the other ones they had. The Pumpkin Stout, I enjoyed that.
The Pumpkin Stout, the Navigator's good.
Yeah.
So going back to it, I'm in Mexico, literally drinking like 15 of these Sols a day on the beach, right? Waking up fresh as a daisy, finest kind, no hangover at all, right? And never really, the whole time I was in Mexico, I never really felt drunk. The last night, I had three beers last night. I woke up this morning, after those coffee stouts.
Yeah.
Pounding headache. And it's just crazy to me.
Well.
The difference.
Well, welcome to 50. But,
Well, no, it was 50 last week, Jim. I was 50 in Mexico last week.
Yeah, but, you know, we're talking.
I think it's the way your body processes the sugars.
I think it's that. And we, you know, now we're starting to read the fine print and see what the average is there, you know, at the end. But, so what the heck, what did the rabbit have?
For what?
Because he was out by almost every night, according to the things.
If you haven't noticed yet, the rabbit is a little overweight. And his eating and his eating habits are not particularly, you know, like, so we go to this place every time, Don Sirloin. It's one of these places they have the big spit and the roast pork. They carve it off of the spit. There's a big flame on the backside that browns it as they turn it. The pineapple on top and the juices kind of flow down and marinate it as it goes. And so we go there for like $5 burritos. And they're fantastic. So I go there, right? And, you know, I halfway through my trip, I started my diet, not including the beer. But, other, you know, eating-wise, I started,
yes, you know, halfway through. Diet.
I you know, recognize I have to start eating a little better. And so we go to Don Sirloin for our burritos, and I ask for the stuff that would be in the burrito, but in a bowl without the wrapping and stuff like that, and without the cheese. Well, and he, you know, will get that with double cheese, you know, and he just eat pounding and, like, you know, drinking these sugary iced teas all day, and so he was pretty lethargic, and, you know, but if you look at him, he's not necessarily any kind of specimen.
No.
He's so great, though. We had a great time.
I was just wondering what type of beers he had, because if you had 12 of those,
he really doesn't drink much on the beach. Okay. He was drinking lemonade on the beach.
Okay. Hey, listen, they're colored stuff in the cups.
He's sort of cheap. He's kind of, you know, he goes down there and he doesn't want to spend a lot of money, which is fine. Right. Which just, is completely fine.
He just wants to eat.
That's just completely fine. He's the best. I love traveling with him, but. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to going to Mexico with Kate next couple weeks, and it's going to be great. That was good, Jim. We got 52 minutes in right here. Thank you for coming in.
Well, listen, thank you. I always want to do the homie cast. I'm missing the guys, and I'm missing the coma of meat and beer drinking and everything. I don't smoke cigars, but what the heck? No.
Well,
I don't judge.
We have to get the guys in. To do, we have to do one with you there to actually make it happen, because they are so much fun.
Oh.
When we have one when I'm not working. Right now we're at work, so we can't exactly get drunk and tape a homie cast. But we did it. Homie cast 22 is in the books, baby.
Thank you.
Boom. I love it. When are you gonna bring in the trumpet?
Oh, I tell you. Soon as I have a couple more beers, maybe I'll bring out my horn and start playing along with it.